This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Delaney, happy holidays, whatever it is that you celebrate. Boy, the traffic has picked up, so people are out there getting stuff. Or maybe they're just out celebrating and having meals with other people. I think I've seen a lot of that, too, as well. So bravo on that connection. We crave it, and I'm seeing more of it. Certainly we know, as the world has opened up more, that people are getting together, and that's a very, very good thing. Isolation, I think, is unhealthy, as we have heard from many of the guests this year when we talked about mental health a lot. The past 3 years have been very, 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 very tough. Pretty tough when you live somewhere and the electricity is out. There are still thousands of people, and I think this is what a lot of people are talking about, without power in North Carolina after that alleged attack on the power substations. I've said this before already. It boggles my mind how open the substations are, but that's how they are. That's how you build them. And this is around the country in many, many places. The opportunity could be there. So a person opened fire at two substations at a place called Moore County, and this happened in North Carolina. So there are people that have had their power restored, like 7,000 plus, give or take. Duke Energy is that North Carolina power company announcing that. But they have equipment and all kinds of things that they have to do to get more people up and running. About 38,000 to 40,000 still don't have power. And the FBI is in the middle of this investigating it. They don't have a motive. They don't know what happened. But somebody decided they were going to shoot up the substations. And it had a big, big, big impact. So even the governor, because, of course, all the news breaks on Twitter, the governor went on Twitter and said the state is providing resources to investigators and power crews because this is serious stuff. Critical infrastructure is serious. It's an intentional crime, and the state and federal authorities are going to investigate and bring those responsible to justice. Let's hope, because they've had accidents, because the traffic lights were out, they're are curfews in place, but of course not everybody's obeying a curfew. There are people that have had to spend nights in shelters. There were classes that had to be canceled. Some of the schools have power restored, but some don't. Some have phone lines, don't have phone lines, and Wi-Fi not available either. So you have schools that are closed now on Tuesday. You have temperatures below freezing on Monday and lows in the 40s. Yikes. So this is just terrible, terrible timing for all of this. And it's more than inconvenient. It's dangerous. And again, it shows how there are areas in our lives that you might not be thinking about necessarily that we're, I think, very, very make us very exposed, very, very exposed. Hey, speaking of being exposed, this has been controversial in San Francisco. There are protesters and advocates and politicians that are pushing the San Francisco Board of Supervisors to reject a proposal that would give city police, get this, in San Francisco, the ability to use potentially lethal remote-controlled robots in emergency situations. It's a great fair or foul. Do you think it's fair? Do you think it's foul? If you talk to some who support the idea and understand it, they say, well, okay, it's a weapon, but it's a necessary weapon in some cases to protect lives. But is it reckless? Is it reckless to have a robot delivering deadly force, you know, through this with an explosive device? Toss the coin. What do you think? San Francisco says the police say they could save lives. because they could deploy it from in situations that they can't maneuver into even. And I don't know. I think the situation would have to be pretty extraordinary. The possibility, I think, for miscues could be huge, and that's part of the deal. Another thing that we have talked about a lot is this race in Georgia. Senator Raphael Warnock held a rally at Georgia Tech a day before the state voted in this runoff election against the Republican challenger Herschel Walker. So here we go, game on. And of course, Herschel Walker is out there in a bus, and he is out there as well, and has stops where he's talking to people, etc. And this is obviously too close to call. Could go in either direction. We don't really know. There was some last minute support from Donald Trump and Melania, who came out to support him, and you know, there was a tele-rally, and there are lots of people that are coming out for these various spots with Warnock. And Warnock has really been going after the character of Herschel Walker. And some Republicans are saying, I just can't go the Walker way. We even had some people email us in Georgia and say the same thing, that they were disappointed. They wish there was a better candidate, but they just can't abide by some of the things that they've heard that have happened with Warner in his personal life. And speaking of running, the speculation is high again that Joe Biden may run for president again, because there was this little blip on the screen where somehow it kind of leaked out that, oh, well, maybe Joe Biden's not going to run again. So now, after a couple of trips, it looks like he may be running again, while Governor DeSantis of Florida watches to see what happens with Donald Trump, and the Republicans, who have gone in a couple of different directions, are looking at him as a possible candidate. But will he decide to run? I've mentioned this before. Throughout the month, we're looking back on big events in 2022. And one of them was the avalanche win that he had to be reelected governor, because he may be that candidate that wins the Republican primaries if he decides to run. And he's got a book coming out in February that is bound to sell well. So while the Republicans look to look at the landscape, because it's only 2 years away, it's Democrats also, I think, looking to possibly different candidates. But what is Joe Biden going to decide to do? And you got to think about what the first couple of years in office have looked like. When you think of the supply chain woes, the inflation that we're dealing with still, the economic hardships that many are going through, I don't know. It is interesting to read the tea leaves, though, I'll say that. Because in a presidential race is where we really pull out even more people that will come out and vote. Remember, we got three branches of government, and certainly who occupies the White House and is the most powerful man in America, or woman, is very significant to all of our lives.
If you're like most Americans, you can see things are out of control. Global problems have local consequences, too many of them. And if the next news headline spins us into chaos, you'd better be ready. Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Today's the day to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. And as you'd expect from a true preparedness company, our food kits are in stock and ship quickly. Those who know what's coming are preparing today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Pauti Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's DrinkSuperTea.com. 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
Welcome Ellis Sandlin to the show. He has such an interesting background, an interesting life, the things that he's done and accomplished, and now the latest thing, of course, a children's book. And I love tigers, so this really struck me. Ravi the Amber-Eyed Tiger, and his partner, his wife, Ann Kumins, also is part of this Ann and Ellis, a dynamic duo, but we're pleased to have Ellis with us. Ellis, thanks for popping on.
My pleasure, Kate.
First of all, let's talk about you. Let's talk about what happened with you. You were born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. You were born with cataracts in the lens of each
eye.
Yeah. Yeah. And what does that mean? I mean, you went to Braille school.
What happened? Well, not Braille school, but I went to regular school with a Braille class, and, you know, we attend classes with sighted children. Of course, I was just a small, I started school when I was 4 years old. I had my first eye operation when I was four and got some sight. And then that year I started school. For the first 3 years I was in Braille, and then, Braille class, and then, 2 years later in 46, or 1940, or 3 years later in 40, see, let me see, 1945 was when I had my first operation. I was 4 years old. And then 2 years later, 1947, in May of that year, I had my second eye operation, which helped my sight pretty good for the next 7 years.
And so then there was a series of things that continued to happen. You didn't let any of that slow you down, no matter what was going on.
Oh, no.
I mean, you were 17, you were playing the guitar, you were singing, you were with your father at benefits, all of that, and played with different bands. So nothing stopped you, whatever was going on with your sight.
No, it didn't.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'll tell you, in 1949, September 49, my sight was good. So that year I started in a sight-saving class at Parker Elementary School in Detroit, and I went there until early February of 54 when I graduated into Hunter Junior High for a couple years. And then my last last year in sight saving when my eyes started to go bad. I went to Barber Intermediate School over on the east side of Detroit. And after that year, I had to go back to Braille. I took home teaching in Braille in the fall of 56. And in February of 1957, I got into the Braille room at Durfee Junior High School. And I finished the last two semesters there. You know, I attended classes with regular sighted children. And, you know, I took notes and had people redo us and everything. And then in February of 1958, me and my friend Ed Buckman graduated together into Pershing High School in the Braille room there. And same thing, attended class with regular sighted children and graduated in June of 1961 from Pershing High School.
Wow. So let's fast forward, and we want people to know about the your book. Tell me about your book and how this came about.
Well, many years, I've always been fascinated with tigers and lions and other wild animals as well. And when I was able to see, tigers have always been one of my most favorite because of their beautiful color. Especially those with the pretty orange coat and black stripes and white undersides and everything. And I just always somehow been fascinated with lions and leopards and all the other as well. And one time years ago, just for own pleasure, I kind of thought up that story about Ravi, the Amber-eyed tiger. And then when I told Ann that, well, we added more things to it and everything. And now I got this book written. So I thought I'd be glad to share that with you, Kate.
Yes, and you heard me say that I love tigers too as well. So
yes,
tell us the story, because people are going to be fascinated by this. What's the story about? What happens to this tiger?
Well, start out with, you know, he was one of three cubs born to a mother tigress, and naturally tigers stay with their mother the first 2 years of their lives before going on their own, because that time the mother teaches them the skills of hunting and stuff they need to know to survive. And out of these three, there's two females and one male, and I chose a male, and I gave him the name of Ravi, and I named him because after an Indian classical sitarist named Ravi Shankar. I don't know if you heard of him or not.
Yes, famous.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I named him after Ravi Shankar. And what happened was, when he left his mother, he started out living on his own and became a pretty good skillful hunter, thanks to his mother's training and everything. And I'm sure his other two siblings did the same thing. And Ravi was out living a pretty good life for a while, successfully hunting his kills and everything. And one day he came too close to an Indian village, and one villager saw him and took a shot at him, and bullet grazed his shoulder. It didn't wound him bad, just grazed his shoulder. And then he made back into the jungle to his lair or wherever. And then Christmas Eve night, he was going to, of course, he didn't know it was Christmas Eve, but he was going to go, because of the wound, it made him angry, and he developed a hate toward man. He was going to turn man-killer because of it. But as he was on his way to the village that Christmas Eve night, he came to a jungle clearing, and, you know, his eyes were glowing amber color from his raging anger and everything. And he stopped, and all of a sudden he heard a noise he never never recall hearing before. It was sleigh bell, and looked up, and there was Santa Claus. And he, for a second, there was just something about that he kind of forgot his vengeance toward man and looked on this jovial elf Santa Claus, and Santa Claus saw his two amber eyes and asked, because it was a dark night, there was no moon, so he asked Ravi to guide him to the nearby village so he could deliver his gifts there to the children. So Ravi did, and it became pretty much a well-loved tiger after that. So that's basically what the story's about.
What do you hope children take away from being read this book or read this book? What do you hope they take away from it?
Take away from it?
Yeah, what do you want them to feel? Do you want them to feel like, wow, this is an interesting, inspiring story, this is a fun story?
Yes, I would like to. Yes, I would like it to be that way.
Yeah, and there's something about, you know, the tiger becomes friends with this young orphan boy, and their friendship grows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because what started that was when Ravi, you know, he was afraid to come out when Santa Claus pointed to the villagers, how he got to their village. When he did, the villagers took a liking to him, and this little orphan boy especially. And what they did, this missionary came out of one of the houses or huts there and told the story of the first Christmas. And all this is what changed Robbie's attitude toward man because of that, you know, the birth of Christ. And on the story goes with this, him and this orphan boy became good friends, and that's basically what the story's about, Kate.
Yeah, so again, Robbie the Amber-Eyed Tiger by Ann and Ellis. Of course, you can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, wherever great books are sold. Will we have another story in the future, maybe, of the tiger?
We're going to try to work on one in the future, yes. A sequel to it, yes.
Yeah, can't wait to see what happens there. Ellis, it's been a delight to have you on the show. Thank you for coming on.
My pleasure, Kate, and nice meeting you, and have yourself a wonderful day.
You too. Well, what a nice guy, not letting a childhood affliction affect him from living a full life. You know, and there's another guy we're going to introduce you to, and the name of his book is 3 Years in the Middle of Nullarbor Plain, and it's in Australia. What's really cool about Ronald Gossman is that he was in the medical industry, and then he decided he was interested in meteorology. He went back to school because he wanted to go to the Antarctic, and if he was able to take these classes, he could do it. So he did get to go to the Antarctic, and then he got to go to this place in the middle of nowhere in the bush where when something grew, you'd have thousands of kangaroos. He talks about it. But what's fascinating is what he was able to learn about the weather and how important living in this area in the middle of nowhere was to people in Adelaide, because they basically figured out the weather for them. And then he got to go to the Antarctic several times and had an amazing amounts of experience there, you know, because again, he was doing the weather. He was putting out the balloons. He was doing some of that research. And I just think it's fascinating to think about being at a weather station 24/7. And what that would be like, first in this area that was huge, flat, arid area, no trees, and it straddles South Australia and Western Australia, and it's just a little larger than the UK. Can you imagine? Population 50. I've never lived anywhere with a population of 50. Way more than that. Anyway, Ronald Gossman is next.
And so I face the final curtain. My friends.
Who listens to radio at night? EMTs, truck drivers, law enforcement, and many other hard-working people just like you, buying products and services from companies just like yours. Many companies owe their success to radio. It's the engaging medium. Call 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News.
Facebook has threatened to remove news from its platform if the U.S. Congress passes a proposal aimed at making it easier for news organizations to negotiate collectively. The News Media Alliance, a trade group, is urging Congress to add the Journalism Competition and Preservation Act to a must-pass annual defense bill. But more than two dozen groups, including the American Civil Liberties Union, urged Congress not to approve the local news bill, saying it does not require funds gained will make their way to journalists. And in the last 3 minutes of the game, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers scored two touchdowns to shut down the New Orleans Saints and again reach 500 as the leaders of the NFC South. This is USA Radio News.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
I need answers to my tax questions. Where can I find them?
Need answers? Try our interactive tax assistant on irs.gov/ITA. Simply select your tax questions, provide your information, and it gives you answers. Also, check our help and resources page and try our online tax map. 5,000 tax topics from A to Z. Plus, you can access forms, publications, in a variety of formats.
Jose works on a farm. Safety is important. His boss calls 811 to determine where it's okay to dig. This protects Jose from hitting an underground line and from serious injury. Because Jose can't tell exactly where or how deep the lines are, he doesn't dig until 811 tells him it's safe. The most important thing is that Jose works safe and goes home to his family. For more information, visit farmsafe811.org. A message from the Pipeline Operators for Ag Safety Campaign.
Tasmania for a conversation with a very interesting man. Ronald Gossman has been to places that I think some of us just dream about even having a chance to go to, especially if you like remote areas. His book is called 3 Years in the Middle of Nullarbor Plain, 1981-1984, those years, through those years. And he's done so many fascinating things before that, what led to it, and then where he went afterwards. So, Ronald, thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks, Kay.
Tell me what led you on this journey of writing the book. How did you come about to decide, I think I'm going to write a book about being in this remote area and dealing with living there and dealing with, you know, doing the meteorology part of this?
Oh, I just enjoyed isolated places, and when I got back from the Antarctic, I had to get a debriefing at the head office of the Bureau of Meteorology, and they asked me where I wanted to be posted next, and I said, I'll go anywhere as long as it's not a city, because I can't stand cities. And they said, you've got some leave, so we try and get you blocks that's been down the Antarctic a posting that you want to go to. And then the next thing they told me, I was posted to the head office in the middle of Melbourne. Oh, I nearly went crazy with traffic and everything. So this, the Nullarbor, a posting came up at the, it was called Forest in the middle of the Nullarbor. And so I applied for that and off I went, got out of the city.
So you go to Nullarbor, and we'll explain to everybody where that is. But you were working for the Australian Bureau of Meteorology and the manned weather station. I mean, that's what it is, so people understand what we're talking about.
And what was Nullarbor like?
Oh, well, I really enjoyed it, and my family came with me. I had two young kids, one 11 and the other one, well, I think he was about 3 at the time. And there were 3 other families. So we had a population of about 8 adults, 5 kids, 2 dogs, and a pet rabbit. So that was our population.
Wow. What did it include? I mean, what were your duties, so to speak, when it came to the weather, and why there?
Well, mainly because it was halfway between the capital city of Perth, of Western Australia, which is Perth, and Adelaide in South Australia. And the weather moves from west to east. So we were in the middle, so we were putting up balloons, working out upper air temperatures, pressures, winds, and this was all coded up and sent out by landline telex to especially Adelaide, which needed it because the weather coming from the west, to give them an idea. And also aircraft use it, the upper winds to plan their flights, because they've got to take more fuel on if they've got headwinds than they would with tailwinds. So they needed to plan what heights they were flying and stuff like that, so that they could work out how much fuel they need. And also the temperatures would affect the fuel. So it was all used for that and for forecasting the weather, for mainly for Adelaide at one stage. Or not at one stage, but it was they used a lot of our data for making a forecast for Adelaide.
Yeah, so the people in Adelaide basically were getting your information that you were transferring back.
That's right.
Wow. Just thinking of that and thinking of this remote location, for everybody listening, think of as remote as you can get. So Ronald said he didn't want to be in the city. You definitely were not in the city by living out there. And you didn't get much rain. How much rain do you basically get a year there? I mean, you're out in the bush.
Yeah, they got roughly between 7 and 10 inches a year. So it's a pretty dry old place. You might go without rain for months, and then suddenly you'll get some rain will come across. And it's amazing how quickly everything grew. The wildflowers, they just come up, you know, within a couple of weeks. And the kangaroos would love it. When the grass came up, there was thousands of kangaroos out there. And sometimes you'd see, you know, maybe 200 or 300 of them all grazing, and then next day they were gone, and they just follow the rain and, you know, wherever the grass grew. Because it didn't take, with hundreds being out there, it didn't take long to sort of chomp their way through the grass, and so they'd move on to another place.
Well, hundreds of I'm thinking of the thousands, but thinking of the hundreds, and that was safe for you? Because now, of course, we're seeing how aggressive, I think they're adorable, but how aggressive kangaroos can be.
Yeah, they can. The big red kangaroo, they can weigh up to about 200 pounds, and they're about over 6 feet tall when they stand up. And they can get a bit aggressive during the mating season. So we always had carried a gun with us, but we never really had any great problems with them.
Oh, thank goodness. And then, you know, besides, and you, in your book, and you should get his book, you get the book and you get a real sense of what it's like to live there and in the middle of nowhere and be supplying this weather and having this life. Then you get to go to Antarctic. You get to go to the Antarctic, and you've been to the Antarctic several times. What was it like the first time you went?
I'm trying to remember. It was just over 50 years ago now.
Remote,
yeah,
right?
I mean, yeah, it was cold. I don't know. I just loved the isolation and, I'd just didn't see me have any problems with it. The expeditioners did, you know, they missed home and because down there in the early days we had no telephones, no TV, nothing like that. And we used to send, messages home by Morse code. The radio officers would, key through to New Zealand, and then New Zealand would pass them on in Morse to Sydney, and then Sydney would landline telex them down to Melbourne, where the Antarctic Division was at the time. It's now moved to Hobart and Tasmania. And Gail in the office would rip it off a telex, put it in an envelope, and post it to your wife. So that was how you got messages back. They were known as WYZZ, W-Y-Z-Z-A, because they gave us a code book, because the telecom, overseas telecom, would charge us 7 cents for a five-letter word. So if you use 6 letters, that was counted as 2 words. So they gave us a code book, and you had one with your wife or friends or whatever, and they were all 5-letter codes, and WYZZA was WYZZA, and that meant "Oh my love, darling." So we called them WYZZAs. You know, you were sending or receiving a WYZZA. It was something like telegrams.
Right. You were like the original texter. Do you know that? You were ahead of your time. You were better than text doing that.
Yeah.
So 3 years in the Antarctic and you got to see the beautiful auroras. I mean, all together, because you had 3 different times that you were there. And you mentioned to me, we had a great off-air conversation for people that are listening to this. And one of the things Ronald told me is that you could have been trapped there at one point for another year because the ice and trying to get you was impossible. So who rescued you kind of ultimately and gave you a ride?
Yeah, it was the Russians. They had a big, Captain Kolebnikov, it was called, and it was a big icebreaker. And they were about, I think they were about 1,000 miles away from us. And the Antarctic Division got onto them. They were actually had 2 Australian tourists aboard. They were doing tourist trips around the Antarctic. I mean, they were about 2,000 miles away, I can't remember. So they managed to batter their way through the ice and got us home. Down the Antarctic, all countries help each other, you know, if anybody gets into trouble. And even at the moment, even today, I would say what's going on in Russia and Ukraine, I think if Ukrainians got into strife and the Russians were the nearest people, they'd probably come and pick them up.
Yeah, and you certainly saw that there. Well, the book is fascinating. I don't want to give too much away. Ronald Gosselin, 3 years in the middle of Nullarbor Plain, 1981 to 1984. We could talk for this whole show. Thank you for coming on. Get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Kate.
Feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Pauti Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Stock market have you nervous with massive fluctuations? With the impact of inflation and the upcoming midterm elections, it's virtually impossible to guess what will happen next. But with Vantage Point, you won't have to guess. Text MONEY to 813-813 to find out how you can forecast market trend changes with up to 87.4% proven accuracy. That's right, 87.4%. Text the word MONEY to 813-813 and find the consistency and confidence you've been looking for in your trading. Vantage Point's patented technology analyzes huge quantities of global data in seconds. No more guessing when to get in or out of a trade. Text MONEY to 813-813. We'll send you a link to our free live training. Protect your hard-earned capital with Vantage Point.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance. By texting the word DEMO, you agree to the terms available at VantagePointSoftware.com/terms and consent to receive calls and text using automated technology or pre-recorded voice about offers or info by or on behalf of Vantage Point. Your consent is not conditioned to purchase and can be revoked at any time. Message and data rates may apply.
Text MONEY to 813-813.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Dr. Lance Fogan joins us. His book is called Dings, his novel, and it's about this 8-year-old named Connor who has this convulsion that happens, a high fever-related convulsion, and the story will just grip you from, I think, the moment that you open the book. We had a wonderful off-air conversation. Lance, thanks so much for coming on.
Yes, thank you.
What was it that drove you to write this book?
Well, I've been in a private writing class in my mentor's home with a group of about 22 other people. More than half of us were in our late 70s, 80s, and 90s, creating every week, writing and coming up in the front of the class and reading what we're writing, and only our mentor would be able to critique it. So initially, the class began with half of the 3 hours devoted to the great literature. So Faulkner, Dostoevsky, Chekhov, those were just names to me, and over my lifetime, I really hadn't read them. And this was my opportunity to get educated, and I'd retired from my clinical neurology practice at age 58, and that was 25 years ago, and this was an opportunity to extend life learning. So after about 10 years, my mentor said, Lance, why don't you write something? So I am reading through the Los Angeles Times. That was like in 2009. There was an article by David and Susan Axelrod. Now, David was President Obama's chief advisor.
Mm-hmm.
And they wrote about their adult daughter devastated by epilepsy. So I thought, right then, there's a story, and I'll have a young kid, an eight-year-old, because my grandkids were about that age, and I'll have him failing school due to unrecognized non-convulsive epilepsy, which is common and which can escape detection for quite a while, where kids can just blank out, and they might be slow in school. So I incorporated that into my novel, but I made my novel a woman's story. It's really primarily the mother, a strong woman. And I had two adult daughters and my wife, and even our cat was female. So I'm prone toward women, and this mother has to deal with the school failing her third grader. The third grader was a bright kid, so she didn't understand why there are the problems with school. And to make her even more bitter was that her husband had signed up for another tour in 2007, Iraq. So she has to go to school and deal with the teachers because the kid he's 8 years old, and he had a high fever one night, and he had a convulsion. That really freaked out the mother. She thought he was dying, and this was at the time that the father had already come home from Iraq, but he was changed. He was drinking more. He had a shorter temper, and it was thought to be PTSD, so she was dealing with this change in her family, and now the school wanted to fail their eight-year-old. So I just brought out how strong she is, and I brought out some literary figures in that what I learned in my writing class. Fitzgerald in The Gatsby, which was a wonderful read.
Mm.
Final lines were boats against the current, brought back as ever into the past. I had the mother drive to school because with this convulsion, the ER doctor recommended that the mother tell the school about this convulsion. And he let it slip that, you know, maybe this is epilepsy. Now, the mother, hearing that, seemed to be devastated. Epilepsy, how could this be epilepsy? Now, epilepsy is defined as more than one seizure. So the doctor just said, I'm not saying it's epilepsy. And as she drove down the streets, familiar streets that she never really paid attention to, she ignored just driving to school. But now things were different. She had to deal with the school and tell them that her child had a convulsion. So the boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into she now sees and recognizes the mothers pushing their strollers and the houses, and these all register. And when she gets to the school, again, she tells the mother, the teacher, that her son had a convulsion. And the teacher just assumes, oh, I've had children with epilepsy before. Well, epilepsy is more than one seizure. So the mother and it gets so angry and says, this is not epilepsy. He only had this one convulsion. But he's not keeping up in school, and nobody knows why. They want to move him back into the second grade from the third grade. And it's because his non-convulsive blankouts are not recognized. So as a neurologist, I harvested my past experience because this is something that we see. Now, one out of every hundred people in America, in the world, has epilepsy. That's 1% of our population.
Mm.
And when the diagnosis is made, and how the diagnosis is made, only a neurologist would ask this question. Connor, have you ever imagined you smelled or tasted things that aren't really there? One of the symptoms of this kind of epilepsy, called complex partial seizures, where they blank out and don't really fall down, jerk, or shake, they hallucinate a smell of burning rubber. And when the doctor finally gets to, do you ever imagine you smell burning rubber? The kid said, that's it. I never knew what it was before. It's what I smell in my daddy's construction yard.
Wow.
And when does this occur? And as an eight, even adults have difficulty explaining what these kind of spells are. It's, they get this feeling in their core and their abdomen, and it rises up to their head, and then they sort of blank out, and they might smack their lips. And if you know what to look for, trained observers would recognize it, but most people would think, like his friends, think he's weird because he's just sort of, you know, goes out of it every now and then. So the kid says, well, it's when I have my dings. And I thought of that title immediately back in 2009 when I started writing it. Dings. Yeah, that's what an eight-year-old.
It's a great, great title, Dings. And we don't want to tell everyone everything about the book, so we're going to leave it there as they'll find out what happens. But it's great, your explanation, because you used what was around you, and that's what you do, and you learned that, I'm sure, in your writing class. What do you hope people take away from reading Dings?
Women are strong, and when they have to deal with the life's problems, they rise to the occasion based on their past experiences. And she, when I was dealing with a husband that really wasn't participating when he came back from his battle experience, and drinking more and short on temper, she realized he's not going to be that much help when the kid is rebelling, having to take these medications. So I also brought in Faulkner, which I learned about in my writing class. We read so much Faulkner. And Faulkner's philosophy was that man will always rise up and live on and continue to meet life's challenges. And she took so much Faulkner, I got in my book and her college classes, that toward the end she said, well, just like Faulkner, we must be able to live along with this, conquer this problem, and not let it defeat us. So it's a strong mother.
Yes, strong females, as you talked about in the very beginning of this, bringing it full circle. The name of the book is Dings, Dr. Lance Fogan. You'll find it under Lance Fogan. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all those great spots. Continued success with your writing. Keep writing, and thanks for joining us on the show.
Well, thank you.
Hey guys, why settle for poor quality Powdy Arco that's sold by stores and online resellers when you can get Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea at drinksupertea.com or 818-965-9113. The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea is only available at drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.